Hi. Hey. Hey, you look terrible. Hey. Your friends turned green. If I didn't know any better, I'd say he was a dragon. A dragon.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
Rawr!
Rawr! And unfortunately, we were going to try to Skype in Trish from Fiji, I think she's in right now.
I believe so, yes.
Fiji, she's swimming with sharks, and she's going to try to get in on the episode before she actually was going to go out today to do that. But unfortunately, apparently Wi-Fi in Fiji is pretty spotty.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. We hope we can get Trish back next week, barring any shark attacks.
God willing.
God willing.
You choose which one you want.
I don't think we have an option. We have no control over the shark in question.
No, we don't.
Just as we have no control over the dragon in question.
None whatsoever. Neither dragon was particularly well-behaved.
No, but domesticated dragons are probably few and far between.
I would say that they're a party of one.
I would think so. We're going to be talking about the Walt Disney classic Pete's Dragon and its reimagining for 2016, because they did a good job of kind of reworking it into its own thing rather than being a strict remake. They dropped the musical angle.
Thank God.
And it's a little more grounded as dragons will be, I guess.
Well, it does everything that we want, we ask from remakes.
Yeah.
It takes the original story and does something new with it.
Yeah, it does feel like it's its own entity now. We'll still paying homage to the original in subtle ways.
Exactly, yes. It's one of the better done remakes that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, and it does actually rate higher than on the review spectrum here. IMDb rates the original as 6.4 out of 10 for the 77, with Rotten Tomatoes scoring a 52% critic score and a 60% audience score. The Pete's Dragon 2016, on the other hand, IMDb rates it a 6.7 out of 10, so it's close.
It is very close, yeah.
And the critic score is way different on Rotten Tomatoes, 88%, which is quite a rise over the 52%, and the audience score was 72%. So overall, critics and audiences like the remake a lot more.
And I would consider myself among those.
As would I.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I saw the original Pete's Dragon in the theater.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, 77, so that was exactly the right age. Right? Mm-hmm. Same year that Star Wars came out.
And thus the Disney was kind of disappointed with their box office.
Yes. Yeah.
But they had no idea.
And I mean, I saw both of them obviously the same summer, because I did see Star Wars in the theater when I was a kid too. But my memories of it are much fonder than, as happens with this show, is we watch these old movies that we were fond of, and now when we rewatch them, it's like, oh, what was I thinking? I was a kid, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That gives you a different perspective on it, but it's not particularly entertaining, to be honest with you. I mean, there's not enough Elliot.
Well, and considering how much they had planned to put in, he was going to be invisible the entire movie, and they're like, no. And then they had animated, he was going to show up in the final sequence, animated, and they still felt the film was kind of boring without an animated Elliot. Yeah. So they inserted more and more as it went along. The initial stuff that they had done, Don Bluth had been given a certain budget and they liked it so much. They said they doubled the amount of film they wanted him to shoot for the movie and didn't change the budget. So he still came in, and then they gave him wagged their finger at him for coming in $75,000 over budget.
Funny how that works.
Like, well, guys, yeah, you budgeted him for half as much, and then you didn't give him any more for twice as much.
Yeah, it's what a great business model.
I know. So, you know, the evil Disney Corporation continues to march on, allegedly.
Allegedly, yes. Got to throw that in there.
I fear the mouse.
Yeah. As you should. As you should. Yeah. I mean, and the thing is the animation was so well done in this. Like, it stands up still. Right. When you're looking at live action and animation together, it's stellar.
Yeah, and the people who stayed behind at Disney, like I said, this is actually Don Bluth's, I think, last film for Disney. And then he would go off to do his own thing and do it quite well. But the few guys that stuck around, it would inform them for 10, 11 years later-ish, about a decade or more later, when they did Who Framed Roger Rabbit, yep. They were far more informed of how to do this because of this film.
I can absolutely see it because the interactions between Elliot and Pete were just so spot on. Like they
were really good for the time, yeah.
And today, I've seen animation that doesn't do it as well.
Yeah, I actually just watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit last night just to kind of make this kind of comparison to where they were just figuring it out. I mean, this wasn't the first film, obviously, to pair up live actors and animation.
No, we did one not that long ago ourselves with Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Bedknobs and Broomsticks, absolutely. Yeah. And Mary Poppins would have been the year before this one, which is why they were hoping for better for Pete's Dragon, but then Star Wars kind of trampled on that. But
as it does.
But yeah, you can see the progression there and how better they got at it just from Bedknobs from the one we watched.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, this was a substantial difference.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like it's night and day.
Even when he's invisible, they do make a good effort to give him a presence and give the character weight. When he's there, you can see impressions in the ground or where he sits or him bumping his head and that sort of thing. Yeah. You can get a real idea of where he is during that time. And I think the remake handles it very cleverly, the way they use this camouflage.
Yeah.
And it works kind of like a lenticular card, you know, those flash cards you would get in a Cracker Jack box. If you're looking at it just right, you're not going to see them. Yep. But if you step a little steps to the left, like he is camouflaging him to your perception where you're standing. So if you start moving from that frame, and that's, I think, where the fur was thought about.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't read anything official about it, but it's just like, oh, that makes sense of why he has the fur, because that's the camouflage, but if you're looking at it the wrong angle, it's not going to look quite right.
Yeah. No, it was really well done. And the other thing that worked really well for me in the original is Elliot's personality. He had so much personality in that original movie, and that's part of why I wanted more of him, right? Because even though his vocalizations were not words, they still conveyed a lot, and they were entertaining. Like, I just loved watching Elliot, by far the best part of the film. Whereas in the remake, he had less personality. He looked amazing, and I mean, he still had personality, but he didn't have that same quirkiness that the original did. Mm-hmm. That's probably the one thing I did miss from the original is how much personality Elliot had.
When I think back to something like this, like, to be honest, I'm not even sure if I'd seen that movie. I certainly didn't remember it very well. And probably knowing what I know now about myself as a kid, I wouldn't have liked it. So if I saw it probably on the Disney TV show. Yeah. And then anytime it came up, I actively avoided it because it didn't have enough cartoon for me.
Yes.
But speaking as to how well that animation looks, it does kind of beg the question of, like, well, why wouldn't you do other stuff, like other adventures of just Elliot?
Yeah.
And just do some animated shorts or whatever. It feels like there was a lost opportunity to exploit that more. But honestly, I feel like Disney does that pretty much all the time. They fail to exploit some of their their properties.
On the flip side, they also sometimes overexploit some of their properties.
Marvel.
Well, and Aladdin, Little Mermaid, there are always there's some properties that go back to the well.
Sure. Well, almost, you know, too often. I'll take Aladdin off that list because the two follow-up sequels were really good.
Yeah.
I haven't seen live action. We'll cover it here someday. Mm-hmm. And I was very fond of the television series as well, which only went 3 seasons. Disney does tend to limit their TV series to about 3 seasons. Yeah. With some of those other ones, like Little Mermaid, I don't think I saw any of the direct-to-video ones. And Lion King had several as well.
Yeah, and then the Timon and Pumbaa series for a while there.
I think, in a way, though, that kind of also proves that they don't capitalize in the right way. It took Pixar to come along and saying, like, hey, your sequel should be just as important as your first one.
Yeah.
Why are you diminishing its value by throwing it direct to DVD or direct to VHS at the time?
Yeah.
So there is something to be said about, hey, you know, it should always be important.
There is, yeah. And Elliot, like I said, the original Elliot was such an engaging character. He was what people wanted to see. And when you got to see him, it was rewarding. It was genuinely rewarding every single time.
Yeah. But it's too bad because it was 1977 and nobody went to see it.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it did okay. It had a $10 million budget, which is, you know, fairly high for 77, I'm guessing. But probably not high for a movie with a lot of set work because they did make this a period piece set around 1900.
And a massive cast.
Yeah, and a very big cast. And, of course, animated pieces as well. And like that lighthouse was built. And they had to go to the Coast Guard. I think they built it in California. They eventually did want to move it to Disneyland, but it just was deteriorated too much to move it. But they had to get permission from the Coast Guard for where they built that lighthouse because it was bright enough to be confused for a real lighthouse.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
I could totally see that.
Yeah. So, you know, if they built themselves a lighthouse, not a cheap movie.
No.
Ultimately, it wound up grossing about $18 million in the theaters, which
for a Disney film is not good.
No, Disney was disappointed with the take, but overall it's a modest success by the day's standards. But it was also one of the first films to be released on VHS. I mean, its catalog code was 10.
Wow.
Yeah, so it would do some good numbers on VHS just because it was one of the first. And I later found a number that was closer to 40 million. So overall, the film, over time, made quite a bit of money.
And that's becoming more and more common,
yeah, right?
Especially with things like this, where maybe it didn't hit the first audience, but you get the nostalgia viewers, like I would have been when I watched it, or rewatched it this time. I'm not so much anymore, but but yeah, there's always that nostalgia. And like you said, being an early VHS release, there's a big audience there for... It's like, oh, Peace Dragon. I remember that from when I was a kid. Blah, blah, blah. And you go watch it, and it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. It passed me by when I was a kid. I vaguely remember seeing the trailers, but it was Star Wars time, and I was 4. So of the fact that I even remember it at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it came out, I wasn't all that interested when they remade it either because I had no nostalgia for it. I remembered what he looked like. To be honest, before I watched the movie, I thought Elliot talked.
Yeah, no, and I to be honest with you, I had that misconception, even though I had seen it. But again, I haven't seen it since I was a kid. I have not watched it since I saw it in the theater when I was a kid.
Ironically, I realized why, though, through a background character of Sigmund the Sea Monster in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And I do remember watching those.
Yeah.
So I used to get Pete and Sigmund mixed up all the time, even though they don't really look alike. No. They're just big green monsters.
Speaking of that particular studio, they have a Banana Splits horror movie that just came out on DVD.
I may or may not have it in a stack that I may or may not use for 31 Days of Horror, and thanks for bringing that up, because I was going to keep that one a surprise.
I'm sorry. Well, you didn't have to say anything.
I didn't, but now I have.
Yes.
So.
Because I'm excited. I want to see it, and it's actually on my list, too.
Well, it'd be a couple of weeks from when everybody hears this, but yeah, I made a point of going down to Walmart on Tuesday and grabbing it. So yeah. I had known about it for a couple of months.
Yes. And I knew it was coming, but I didn't really, but it was just came out on DVD like this week or last week. Right?
Speaking of, when the recording of was. Traumatizing childhood memories.
Yes. I loved that show when I was a kid.
I didn't. Again, if it wasn't animated, I didn't give a fuck about it.
I love the weirdness of it.
I love the theme song, yeah. though.
Oh, yeah.
Banana Splits theme song's great.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's probably going to be on at least two of the 31 Days of Horror list this year.
Yes, I doubt it's on Trish's radar at all.
You never know.
It might be. Yeah. It'll be funny if we all do it.
Yeah. But we've already revealed that that one's going to be on at least one list, probably two.
Yeah. So, if you're interested, 31 Days of Horror, we're going to be watching 31 horror movies over 31 days, one for every day of October, and that will culminate into a couple of specials in November.
As usual.
As usual.
Now back to Rat.
Back to Rat. With terrible segues out of the way, how about we listen to the 1977 classic trailer for Pete's Dragon?
Let's do that.
Okay.
He's back. Walt Disney Productions. Invisible, impossible, troublesome, massive mischief. Pete's Dragon. A motion picture full of adventure.
Push down.
And excitement. Beware of the evil Dr. Terminus. And his helper, Hoagie. Hide from the mean.
Gogans!
Family of wicked wackos. Share an irresistible secret with Lampy.
Dragon!
Celebrate with Nora, a newfound friend. And live it up with the funniest, most lovable dragon alive.
Elliot! My dragon!
The best pal a boy could ever have.
I love you too.
Sing.
Get higher and higher and glide above the clouds.
Dance. And laugh. With a wonderful motion picture. Walt Disney Productions. Dragon.
Wow, that's great. You're the most wonderful dragon in the whole world.
You're never too old to feel young. Pete's Dragon.
The classic Disney voice.
Yes.
Man, I remember that voice from everything. Disney from that period.
Yeah.
From like the 70s right into the 90s. That probably was a 90s VHS trailer, I'm guessing, but
possibly, yeah, or mid-80s at least, right?
Yeah, I mean, the guy could have been working since the 70s, but I'm thinking that was later.
Possibly, or they, I mean, they do frequently try to find somebody who has a similar voice. It could be a different guy with the same type.
A guy over a 15-20 years span, that's not a big thing for voiceover, so.
No, not at all. Right. Simpsons.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Disney properties.
I would be surprised if somebody from Simpsons wasn't in this somewhere. Or at least somebody who guessed it on The Simpsons. The cast of Pete's Dragon, this movie was directed by Don Chaffee, based on the story by Seton I. Miller and S.S. Field, with a screenplay by Malcolm Marrowstein, who wrote a lot of episodes for Dark Shadows and a Jim Carrey forgotten movie called Love Bites, which might be worth.
I like that movie. It was fun. It was one of his early film roles, it was really early.
Yeah. It's this comedic vampire movie. Yeah.
Before you go too far, did you not catch the John Chaffee connection?
I was getting back to him.
Okay, good. Okay, yeah, good.
Because we have talked about John Chaffee, who the director of this film, once before, and that was episode 171.
1 million years BC.
Correct. Yeah. And also directed Jason and the Argonauts. So here's a guy who's used to directing actors to, I don't know, baseball or something.
Yes.
A tennis ball on a stick. Because, you know, you're dealing with Ray Harryhausen effects in both those movies that had to be composited in later. And, of course, I mentioned Don Bluth, who was the animation director on this film. And he, of course, would have a great career afterwards. This movie starred Sean Marshall as Pete, who really just kind of left acting after this and would...
Yeah, he did some TV and then he was kind of pretty much gone.
I think he went into, like, sports and stuff. So
music.
Music, okay. Yeah, music, I don't know what he went into. And yeah, he was probably most famous known for the Fitzpatricks. Helen Reddy, who plays Nora, there's a roundabout tie to another episode.
Is there? I couldn't find it.
It's roundabout because she also left acting shortly after this film, yeah. But she would continue with music.
Yes.
And she did a song, I Am a Woman, for My Best Friend's Wedding, which we covered in episode, I want to say 11, maybe it's 17. I didn't write that down, but we did cover that. I think it's episode 17. My Best Friend's Wedding.
And I didn't participate in that episode. That
and we would have talked about her.
Yeah, and I blanked out that episode anyhow.
I try to as well. Trish is not here. We're going to save romantic comedies, God damn it. That's what she would do right now. Like, no, we won't. Jim Dale was Dr. Terminus, most famous for his Carry-On movies. He was in quite a few of those. And having watched him in this film, I want to watch the Carry-On movies.
Yeah, he was really entertaining. You know, really it's funny. Was. I was watching him. I'm like, oh my gosh.
He's slick.
Yes.
The whole time I'm like going, here is the foundation for what would be Julian Slink in Blood Drive. Yeah. And if you're a longtime listener, you know what we're talking about, our favorite show that nobody watched, and so it was canceled in one season.
Yes. Yes, to my great disappointment.
Yes, but that showman archetype,
yeah,
it really felt like he was there.
And right to the outfits and everything, because they were so slinkish.
It was less
gothy.
Less gothy, yeah. But ultimately,
the base
very similar yeah. character.
Yes.
I loved it.
Yes.
I didn't get enough of Dr. Terminus.
When he wasn't singing.
Well,
I mean, he's a good vocalist, but the music in this, almost all of it just made me go, oh my God.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about it, although it does tell you stuff in the narrative.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, that one song where it's actually pretty grisly, where he tells you what he's planning to do when he catches Elliot.
Yeah.
Once he finally believes there's a dragon at all, and then he sees in his little cookbook that dragon parts can do all sorts of things, yes, for his, which I don't know why he cares. He should just tell people they're dragon. He's clearly
a con artist,
yeah. So why do you give a shit if you have authentic ingredients or not?
I think the rationale is that if he has authentic ingredients, he just makes that much more money.
Yeah, maybe. Right? Yeah.
Right. All of a sudden, he's got stuff that works.
Yeah. And he could show it off. Yeah. He's like, here's a dragon tooth. You know, yeah, it's the size of your hand.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's. I think that was sort of the whole thing. Is like, I can go legit this time now, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was slimy, and yeah, they established that right at the very beginning. I love this. I love the scene where they're coming on the with their wagon on the sail.
On the sail. Yeah. I mean, he's such an interesting, larger in life character, yeah, and I'm like, well, he didn't quite have that figured out. They were hoping to make enough so they could buy some horses again.
Yes.
The sail was great because it got them where they were going, but they sure had to plan how to stop in advance.
Yes.
What's not going to fall down when we hit it?
Yeah.
Mickey Rooney was in this as Lampy, and he's in everything. He has such a huge
over
body
300
work.
Credits,
massive body of work, and lovable in everything. And I can't list everything that he's in, but Breakfast at Tiffany's is one of the most famous ones. Yeah. But I mean, every time I saw Mickey Rooney on screen, even as a voice, he's fucking great.
Yeah. And he was a voice in one of our episodes.
The Year Without Santa Claus.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, episode I didn't write that one down, but
168.
Thank you very much. No, I actually did miss it, but I remembered it.
Yes, you did.
Red Buttons was in this. We've talked about Red once before. I almost had forgotten we had, and he's not the only one in this movie. Shelley Winters also in this movie from episode 69.
The Poseidon Adventure.
Poseidon Adventure. And Shelley Winters was one of the Gogans. It was the Mama Gogan.
Yes. Yeah, we need to talk about them and that's when I went to the casting here. For
yeah,
sure.
Red Buttons was Hoagie and he was Dr. Terminus's sidekick.
Yes. He was so good too.
He was.
The performances in this are so good. It's just so many good actors and so many great performances in a movie that kind of fell flat a little
bit. It's kind of mediocre, yeah. Yeah. Jane Keane was Miss Taylor, the schoolmarm that was really bitchy. She was in The Explorers. Jim Bacchus, Mr. Magoo, the mayor, Thurston Howell III from Gilligan's Island.
Yes, he was.
And an extended cameo. It was great. I liked him.
He was a lot of fun in this. Like I said, everybody was a lot of fun in this.
Yeah.
I did not realize how far back his performance as Mr. Magoo. He was literally the voice of Mr. Magoo all from 1950.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Every time that they tried to reinvent it and bring it back, they went to Jim.
I remember when it finally I clued in as a kid that they were the same guy. It was this big revelation that, oh my God, the guy who plays Thurston Howell is Mr. Magoo. What? And it was just mind-blowing revelation for just a young child to start making those connections.
Yeah, I remember that moment for myself too, actually.
Oh yeah, what was that one?
Same one. I used to watch both shows at my grandparents when I was a kid, and yeah, that was I'm like the same guy. So you can't see my hand gesture, but
yeah. So yeah, it was always cool for me. I'm sure some of our audience is rolling their eyes, but you had that revelation as a kid somehow when you start making connections to things you like and it's the same actors you like, and you didn't have a clue at the time. And I mean, it still happens today.
Yes.
So I'm always enthusiastic about learning about something, and we'll have a couple more of those as we go along in this episode. Charles Tyner was Merle. You can see him in Cool Hand Luke. Gary Morgan was Grover. You can catch him in episode 44.
Oh, Logan's Run.
Logan's Run.
You missed Charles Tyner, too.
Did I?
Oh, yeah. He played a big character in The Longest Yard.
Oh, damn it. I did miss that one.
Yeah, 156. He played, now I can't remember the damn name, but he played the snitch.
Oh, there you go. See, all sorts of connections of episodes. If you haven't listened to them, you should go listen to them. Jeff Conaway was Willie. He was in Grease. Cal Bartlett was Paul, and we covered him in episode 73.
Paint Your Wagon. Yeah, he's a minor role in both films, but yeah, he was still, there's still a connection.
Yeah, and comedian Charlie Callis was the voice of Elliot, and Charlie Callis, with most of his stand-up, would do the and just make all these stupid, weird, high-pitched voices, noises and stuff within his act, and I can see why they used him in The Dragon.
Oh, yeah, he was... His performance was excellent because he really did give you a sense that, we talked about it already, but Elliot had a personality.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he didn't speak, per se, he did have a few words that he would say.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it was just these really odd vocalizations that worked really well for the character.
Yeah, and there were some noises I recognized from his act. I don't think I saw a lot of Charlie Callis when I was a kid, but I used to like those Dean Martin roasts, and Charlie Callis would show up in a lot of those. So that's kind of how I learned about Charlie Callis, was through the Dean Martin roasts.
Hmm.
And actually, Red Buttons was probably that was probably my biggest exposure to Red Buttons as well, was through those roasts.
Yeah.
Which actually was really funny.
They weren't as mean-spirited as the roasts we get now. I mean,
no, I thought Red could get pretty, well, not Don Rickles mean, but Red was really kind of clever with how he did his stuff.
Yeah, he had a very witty cruelty, though. It wasn't, you could tell that it was...
It was always like, they didn't throw a dinner for George Washington, they didn't throw a dinner for... I don't know, I liked him.
Yes.
you can see those old Dean Martin roasts on Amazon Prime.
There we go.
I have watched a lot of those not that long ago. Back to Right Again.
Yes. With a cast like this, we're going to get sidetracked. It's just inevitable.
It is. And a lot of this is the cast for me, because I wasn't so into the musical bits, and it does kind of slow down the movie. But I felt that way, I think, in Bedknobs and Broomsticks as well.
Yeah, I don't think
I like animated musicals.
It depends on what they are. We talked about Aladdin, and Aladdin, the musical numbers fit really well, really well, right? And they do in this to a certain extent, but they're so long. Like, each musical piece is quite long.
There's so many of them.
And there's so many of them. I was watching, and I was bitching to you. I'm like...
Yeah, you were 20 minutes in, and you were in the fifth song.
Yeah. Fourth or fifth song, the reason I was particularly sort of annoyed by it was because there's a one song that doesn't feel like it really genuinely fits, and it's such a long scene, is the one in the tavern.
Oh yeah,
because it doesn't really move the story forward that much.
One doesn't,
and it goes on and on and on and on.
Drunken dance about him seeing a dragon that nobody's going to believe anyway.
Yes, yeah. And
so it does just drag the film down a little bit.
Yeah.
As much as you'd like to see a song and dance routine by Mickey Rooney,
yes,
it it is one of those things that doesn't forward the story. Like, actually, the opening song and the closing song are by the villains.
Yeah.
I can't think of a movie, any other Disney film that does that. But, yeah, you have the Gogans at the beginning who are looking for the lost Pete.
The runaway Pete.
Runaway Pete. Yeah. Not lost. The runaway Pete. Yeah. They had bought him.
Which, yeah.
Essentially, he was child slavery, so yeah. I don't blame him from running from these freaking Hills Have Eyes hillbillies.
Yeah, and actually, that leads to the best song in the movie to me, the Bill of Sale song.
Yeah.
That's my favorite song in the whole movie. Just that whole scene, that one, like, of all the scenes in the movie that don't feature Pete,
yeah.
That one works the best for me. It is freaking hilarious.
As far as musical numbers go, even though I thought it was dumb, 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 the Brazzle Dazzle song's kind of catchy.
Yeah, yeah, it is too. But yeah, the Bill of Sale.
Bill of Sale's great.
Yeah, I love that one. But yeah, the whole child slavery thing, and I can see why they just took that right the hell out of the remake. It's like,
yeah, well,
especially because they modernized it.
I warned you because I was watching. You were watching the original while I was watching the remake. I watch these backwards. Sometimes I do that, rarely, but it's like I kind of had a feeling that I was just they were going to be quite different. So I'm like, I'll. I'll watch the remake first, and it's sentimental. It's heartbreaking in several ways.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very emotional film, this one.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and it starts off with a freaking horrific tragedy.
In a way, the 2016 is more of a traditional Disney movie than the Disney classic.
Yeah, it's got Bambi syndrome. Let's kill mom and dad right at the beginning of the movie.
Right? So you have 5-year-old Pete lost in the forest that's being stumbles upon a pack of wolves. Hey, juicy and easy.
Yes.
But along comes the dragon who gets named Elliot based on the child's book he managed to grab
that he was reading at the time of the crash and brought with him. Yeah,
so these few connections that he has about the real world are in this book and what he has up to 5 years old. Like, he doesn't know how much time has passed when we catch back up to him, which is 6 years.
Yeah, but there's that great scene where the little girl whose name I've forgotten now, where she asks him how old he is, and he does this sort of thinking moment, and he goes, 5.
Yeah, that was Natalie.
Yeah. And she was a great addition. I think having that really close dynamic between two children really helps develop Pete more.
Yeah, and ultimately, both films are about him finding a new family and having to kind of let go of the life he was leading. He was kind of, you get used to things, yeah. You know, he was in the remake, he was living in the forest with the dragon.
He's a wild boy. Yeah.
He's a wild boy. Yeah. Like, he had tattered clothes. He was Tarzan as a child. He was running through the movie, mostly in a loincloth and bare feet.
Yes. Yeah. And he's agile and strong and like all those things that you would need to be if you were living in the woods. It was really well handled. I think they really gave you a sense of the fact that he's not quite feral, but he's close.
Yeah. And now, back in the original, he's a survivor. He's taken some beatings from these Gogan hillbillies, and he's not going back. He's not going to take that anymore. And he's already befriended the dragon when we meet him.
Yeah.
And in a way, he's more the parent. He takes responsibility for the dragon, who does get into a lot of mischief.
He does get into a lot of mischief.
Yeah.
Because he's big and clumsy and goofy. I don't want to say he's dumb. He's goofy.
Yeah. Originally, Disney had picked up this film back in the 50s, I think 57, and had intended it for their Disneyland television show as a two-parter. And, of course, that got scrapped, and it would be almost another 20 years before we'd see it. I think they started developing in 75 again as a feature. And in a lot of ways, that script still feels like a 50s script.
Yeah, it does. I think that explains sort of where some of its failings are. Mm-hmm. Right, because I don't think that even in the 70s you didn't see some of the more adult themes that you would have, that you actually saw in the 50s, like the drinking, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that Mickey Rooney's character Lampy is essentially a drunk,
and I think that might have been intentional. There were several people who worked on this film, including Mickey Rooney, whose fathers or close relatives were alcoholics, and I think that was something they wanted to address, but it didn't really go anywhere.
No, they tried to use it to comedic effect instead of sending a message with it.
Well, I mean, I guess there's a minor message there that you're the town drunk, nobody's believing the word coming out of your face.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's that. There was that, but it was so thinly veiled, and it just didn't, you didn't get that sense from it.
So, you know, he's treated as a joke in town, and that's unfortunate to see, you know, such a lovable character be treated that way. Alternatively, Meacham kind of got that too. He was not a drunk in the remake, but he was this elderly guy telling stories of dragons that he saw, and, you know, most people just saw them as parables.
Yes.
Good stories are telling children.
And fairy tales,
And fairy tales, and nothing to be taken seriously.
His character was still worked. It worked really, really well. Nobody takes him seriously, but they still respect him more than they respected Lampy.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Because, yeah, his daughter ran the lighthouse, really. He was drunk all night, slept all day.
Yeah. The few times he was sober, it was like, oh, this guy can be together. Yeah. And he definitely knows what he's doing. Yeah. But it's unclear as to why he's given up so badly.
They never really touch base on that.
It's almost like any time there's something sentimental or sad that they want to do, they dance around it or give it a cute song to kind of soften the blow.
Yeah, and the remake does not do that at all.
Oh, God, they pull on that heartstring as often as they can.
Yeah.
I'm not crying, you're crying.
Yeah, right? Because with Meacham, they talk about how his wife had passed when his daughter was quite young.
Right. And then his daughter's got a fiancé that's missing.
Yes.
And she's kind of, like, lost hope on that as well. You know, like, and you've got Pete, who's lost his family.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, everybody's life sucks.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in here, right? And then the fishing's dried up, and they're blaming it on Elliot. And,
yeah.
Right? It's funny, because they don't believe in the dragon. Yeah. But they blame the dragon.
Well, okay. I mean, Nora in the original, she's the one who's lost love. Yeah. And that one, you'd think they'd have an opportunity, but it doesn't really work.
No.
And then you've got Grace, who's actually got a pretty good life and has got a fiance. And, you know, they're actually all right.
No, they're just good people.
They're just good people. Yeah. And that's that family unit that Pete really needs.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly it. And it works to great effect in this remake.
Yeah.
Because they take what's in the original and they give it some body and some fullness, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's now not just a young woman who's not even widowed. Her fiancé is missing at sea and her drunken father. It's an actual family unit. And
it's a working family unit and a really good one.
Yes.
And it gives you hope for Pete finding that again.
Yes.
The film, in a lot of ways, moves into an environmental message.
For sure.
Because
she's a Forest Ranger.
Forest Ranger, and her husband or fiance, I wasn't even sure if they were married or not, but they're foresters.
Yes.
So,
but he follows the rules.
Yeah.
He's the rule follower, and he's got a brother played by Carl Urban, who is
great.
As always,
yes.
Right? But he's the one who is like, well, let's push the limits, right?
He's a little more dubious on the moral scale sometimes. Like, he would be the closest the film has to a villain, but he's a good person for the most part. Like,
he has a redemption cycle.
Yeah, does. He is selfish, but he's also protective. He's protective of his coworkers. He's protective of his family. Those are touching moments too when he exercises those. He's like, okay, he's not a much, he's a layered character who's making some selfish choices.
Yeah, there's no like chew up the scenery villain in this one.
No, there is no Dr. Terminus here. Like they're so different, these movies, and I really, really enjoy that. Like the real kind of theme of the movie is still there, but the road traveled is quite different.
It's quite different, yeah. So, I mean, they keep the heart of the story, which is really important.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they make them very different stories in the way that they're told, which, again, that's what we keep saying needs to happen with a remake.
Yeah, and I like that they moved the remake into the 70s. It actually takes place the year the original film was released, 77, which is kind of fun. So they're both still period pieces.
Yeah.
It's less clear with that because it just feels like kind of a lazy mountain town in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's unclear because sometimes they can feel like they're out of time even when you go to them now.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and they changed the locale substantially. They moved it from the East Coast to the West Coast because this remake takes Pacific in the North West, or Pacific Northwest.
Yeah,
where if I'm correctly, the original takes place in Massachusetts, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Passamaquoddy?
Yes.
That's a made-up town that nobody could pronounce properly.
Yeah, which was, again, some of the funnier moments are when Dr. Terminus is trying to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do believe they were the town was named after a native settlement in Maine.
Maine. Yeah, because I know that Massachusetts and Maine have those fun names like Passamaquoddy.
I think the film was supposed to be set in Maine, even though I think a lot of it was shot in California.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they did a good job of making it look Maine-ish.
Yeah, because it tends to have that grayer tone
you expect to see. Yeah. Yeah, there's a coolness about the film that in terms of like temperature, the way it's shot, it just feels cool and a little bit chilly.
Yeah.
So it works really well. There's lots of good things about the original film. I think it's just one of those movies that's just so dated. It really is
part of its time, and in a lot of ways, I'm not even sure if it was part of the time it was meant for. Yeah. But it's not that much different than that. I think it's only a year later than Mary Poppins. Yeah. So I mean, Disney was already doing that kind of stuff to good success at the time. Because it stood out. I mean, they're family friendly fare, and now they're wishing they can push the boundaries a little bit more. I mean, back then they would only do G. Now they do PG, and are even willing to do PG-13
on occasion. Yeah, I think part of the problem with this movie is its runtime. It is so long, and it's the story itself doesn't have enough meat to warrant that kind of runtime.
I mean, it would have been fine. Honestly, it would have been, I think, a far more interesting film without most of the musical numbers. A lot of that could have been handled in dialogue. Yeah. I mean, I get why they did it.
Yeah.
And some of the songs are pretty good. Yeah. I think a lot of them aren't, though.
A lot of songs could have been a lot more concise.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, that bar scene, I think, is close to 5 minutes.
Yeah, and it doesn't drive anything forward. And it's one of those indulgent moments where it's like, yeah, you go get in, go try to tell dragons, and everybody's like, oh, there's the drunk guy again.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, we're going to keep going back to that one because that's by far the most sort of jarring.
To be honest, I felt the first song when the Goggins are looking for Pete was too long.
Yeah, on the whole, I find them most of them too long. I actually timed one of the songs. It was like 4 minutes.
Although when they first turned up and their heads are popping out and they have this look, I'm like, am I watching the right movie? Because I really did. I'm like, this is suddenly, because they were scary.
Yeah.
I'm like, is this Hills Have Eyes? Am I right watching the right movie?
Yeah, they looked pretty hillbilly, scary-ish, yeah. And I mean, Shelley Winters is barely recognizable.
She was. Honestly, I had forgotten she was in this movie, having actually watched the movie, and then looking back at my notes, I'm like, oh, she was Mama Goggins.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't recognize her at all.
Yeah, no, and that's a credit to not only the makeup, but the performance. Yeah. Right.
But they were. I thought they were probably the scariest thing in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
no question. And they were, partly because they're the most uncomfortable, because, I mean, not because of who they are, like the hillbilly kind of thing, but their intent, right? Mm-hmm. They are rotten, the core people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they talk about using him for slavery, beating him, and then eating him if they want to.
Yeah. And there's even a suggestion that they're willing to rape somebody.
Oh.
When they want to talk about how they want to hold Nora.
Right. Oh, yeah, the two boys.
Yeah. And even the dad.
The dad, yeah.
Right? And I mean, it's veiled, but that's what they're saying is, we want to sexually abuse this woman. I mean, there's some pretty adult stuff happening there. I'm sure I didn't notice that when I was a kid, but as an adult, I certainly noticed
that. And even Dr. Terminus in his song, when he's looking through his book about what to do with the dragon, what sorcerer did you steal that from? But like, why does this book exist if you don't know dragons exist? But okay. he's all giddy about chopping it up.
Yeah.
I mean, he tries to find some interesting ways to get the dragon. I'll buy it off you.
Yeah. He tries a straightforward approach at first.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, his intent is villainous, but his approach is straightforward. Right? I mean, he offers him $5 for it, but...
Well, 1900s, it probably sounds like a lot.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, but when you certainly, he was charging $1 for a bottle of his elixir.
Yeah, for a guy who couldn't even buy a horse. I don't know if his money was getting good.
Well, I think he'd sold more.
He'd sold five bottles, so he was probably fine.
Yeah, for the time being, yeah.
But when Pete first arrives in this town, like, the whole town hates him and his imaginary dragon because it is a fishing community. So there's superstition when the fish dry up. I mean, it just happens sometimes, yeah. But there's a superstition that, oh, this new kid must be tied to this, and his tales of dragons are scaring away the fish. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, and the thing is when Elliot first arrives in town, he does a lot of damage.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, he does a lot of damage. He ruins the freshly paved sidewalk, which gets ruined again by Dr. Terminus, which was funny.
Yeah.
It's funny how Dr. Terminus ruins everything that he had just fixed after Elliot had ruined it.
Pete, when he's running his stick along the fence, then of course Elliot's got to do something similar with his paw, but he just knocks down the fence.
Yes. Yeah. And then walks through the fresh cement and all that stuff. Yeah,
yeah, there's a lot of carnage costs. And of course, anybody who's rude to Pete, oh yeah, Elliot's going to do something to you.
Yes. Yeah, it's fairly benign, a swat in the butt or knocking you down or whatever. But yeah, he's very protective of Pete.
Attaching this Golmarb's dress to that nail.
Yeah.
Problem is, nobody can see the dragon, so Pete keeps taking the fall for it.
Yes, yeah. And then he ruins the schoolhouse. So he's not established that he's a benefit to the community in any way.
No, right? But I mean, he is a big, lumbering, clumsy dragon. Yeah. I mean, when they show the dragon, you can see he's paunchy and his wings are small. Like, he's just a lumbering, clumsy oaf.
Yes. But by the end of the movie, you wonder if that's... You kind of wonder if maybe that's just the way he plays himself because of who he's with. Because at the end of the movie, you kind of... they establish, and I think this is really wonderful, is that he exists just to help children who need help.
Yeah, and the need for Pete to continue to have him around, Elliot around, wasn't there anymore.
Because he gained his family. Yeah.
And I like how the remake handles that theme as well. Yeah.
Differently, but
I think in the novel, or at least the story it's based on, like, Elliot is imaginary entirely. Yeah. So I'm kind of glad that they treated the dragon as a real thing. And it just makes... Although it's one more trauma they could have added to the remake, I suppose. Yeah. This PTSD this poor kid's got. But that poor dragon didn't want to lose Pete to the family.
No.
Because it was something he had. But at the end, he was willing to let go and find his own family.
Yes. And that was a beautiful way of doing it.
Yeah.
It changed it, but that one of the few things I enjoyed more was the fact that Elliot did exist. Mm-hmm. Specifically to help children in need.
Yeah, and in a way, the animated film, it's a little more sadder of an ending because they're not going to see each other again.
Yeah.
Whereas you get the feeling the family, the new family unit that Pete finds, they're going on family vacations to go visit Elliot and his new pride of dragons or whatever grouping of dragons is called.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know, a flight of dragons?
That's not bad.
Well, we'll go with it. I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? I think now is a good time to run that trailer.
Let's do that.
For the 2016 Walt Disney live action, well, I guess they're both live action, reimagining.
We'll call it a remake because that's what we do.
Yes.
But it's very, very different.
I was out here at the Eastern Pad. But that's
50 miles east.
Where we found him.
Hey.
Wait.
Do you know where your parents are? Your family?
I guess he was on a picnic or a camping trip. He wandered off and got himself lost.
Been out in the woods, doing things his own way. Sounds like a boy after your own heart.
How long has he been out there?
6 years.
Nobody can survive in that forest for 6 years. At least not alone.
You'll see. I have Elliot.
Who's Elliot?
I need to get back to him. He gets scared when I'm gone.
Is Elliot a person?
No.
He looks like a dragon.
What's a dragon?
Shh.
That's a dragon.
To run anymore, Pete. You can stay with us.
This thing is dangerous.
We don't want to leave you, but they'll come looking for you. Let's going to happen to Elliot?
You have no idea what this thing is capable of. Let's go hunting.
You're very brave. Did you know that? You might be the bravest boy I've ever met.
Attention all units. We're eastbound on Millhaven Road in pursuit of a
dragon! It's a dragon!
You can't say dragon over the radio.
Lovely trailer. All right, Pete's Dragon from 2016 was, the screenplay was by Toby Hallbrooks and David Lowery, who also directed this film and directed A Ghost Story, which was a pretty good movie as well. Budgeted at $65 million, it wound up grossing almost $144 million worldwide. Moderate success.
Yeah, it didn't review very well.
I don't know. I mean, it did better than the last one.
It did, but yeah, I remember reading, like, because I remember when they announced this, I'm like, oh, pretty cool, right? I wasn't like super excited, but I'm like, yeah, that's cool. And then when it came out, I was hearing that a lot of reviews were not very kind to it, but the critics score makes light of that.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe it's just some of the more public ones is what you saw, but I think they did a fantastic job of kind of peeling away what the core of the story is and then making it their own.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think it's a superior film.
Yeah, I do too. Starring Bryce Dallas Howard as Grace, and of course you have seen her in the Jurassic World movies most recently. Robert Redford, if I have to go through his resume, you don't watch movies.
Yeah, he's so good, and it's a shame he doesn't act more, but he's almost 90 years old. But he looks so good for a guy who's almost 90.
Yeah, and doing Marvel movies.
Yeah.
He was, of course, in The Natural and Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid and lots of other great and well-known and renowned stuff, so including the Sundance Film Festival.
Yes.
His contributions to the medium are extensive. Oakes Fagley was Pete, and he was in a movie called Wonderstruck. Una Lawrence was Natalie, the other child of the family. She was in Southpaw. Wes Bentley, of course, best known for American Beauty, was Jack. Carl Urban, most recently in The Boys on Amazon Prime,
Star Trek series,
yeah. The Dread movie. Lots of great stuff. He was Gavin, who was Jack's brother in the film. Isaiah Whitlock Jr. was Sheriff Gene Dentler, and you can see him in the fantastic Black Klansman.
Yes, which I haven't seen yet.
Marcus Henderson was Woodrow, and you can see him in Django Unchained and Get Out. Aaron Jackson was Abner, and he was in the big box office bomb Mortal Engines.
Oh my.
Phil Greve was Bobby, and he was an orc in several Lord of the Rings movies and Hobbit movies. And Steve Barr was Deputy Smalls, and the voice of the dragon Elliot was John Kassir from Tales from the Crypt. He was the Crypt Keeper.
Oh, how about that? It's odd, considering I didn't think that Elliot really had a voice per se in this
remake.
Yeah,
like you needed a human being to do the grumbles and growls.
And the odd roar.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just surprised me because I didn't realize it.
I was just as surprised as you when I read it.
Yeah, because so. that you would have thought that would have been more fully sound effects than a voice.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, I'm not going to go back into the whole personality mm-hmm. thing, but yeah.
And it is very convincing.
Yeah, it is very convincing. Kudos to him because I didn't realize it was a person making those noises. But I'm also surprised that they had a person making the noises.
Let alone the Creep Keeper.
Yes.
Because there is no element of the Creep Keeper there.
None at all.
Yeah. At least with Charlie Callis. I could tell it was Charlie Callis.
Yes.
There are certainly some signature noises he makes that made it into Elliot.
Yes. But again, they were perfectly suited for the character.
They were. And, you know, I thought for another CG dragon, there's a lot of character to this Elliot as well.
There was a lot of character, but I said in terms of like there's a difference between character and personality, right? And because mm-hmm. certainly like I did find the 2016 Elliot likable and engaging, and mm-hmm. and you empathize with the character for sure, because he did have character.
He's so huggable.
Yes. Right? That's part of the way he looks. And they made him more expressive facially.
Yeah.
Well, not more expressive, but they made him very expressive facially. Yeah. Right?
I'm kind of glad they kind of went with the more Eastern dragon influence, which are also known more as good dragons than what the Western dragon is, which is usually more of the more pointy nosed Game of Thrones
lizard like
we're gonna burn and eat your worlds type of dragon. So I mean, and just goes to show you from different parts of the world how they're treated as villains in Western world and
revered in others,
revered as good things in the Eastern world. So yeah. I get why they did it that way, because the Western dragons are a lot scarier.
They are. And this one is quite cuddly. I mean, yeah. even with the teeth and the claws, he still looks like something you want to hug.
He's pretty much likable right away when he pokes his head out of the forest in that first scene. It's so good.
Yeah, it is. Right? I mean, he's really well done. And this is a case of where CGI worked really, really well.
Yeah.
They did a great job of bringing some life to it, because we've talked about how CGI can look kind of flat and lifeless no matter how well it's done. I didn't find that with this one. I found that they gave him this CGI character a very lifelike appearance, like even though he is CGI. Mm-hmm.
I find now that they have developed motion capture performance properly, I'm guessing he wasn't just made up on a screen. I'm guessing there was some motion capture elements involved to give him more of a personality.
Yeah, I think you're probably correct, yeah. And I find that like fantastic creatures like this tend to work better in CGI than when they do like human characters in CGI.
Well, you don't have a preconception of what they're going to look
like.
That's
right. So
when you do a human character, say an actor that's passed away in Rogue One, and you've completely CG'd him, yeah, it looks really weird.
It looks and flat and somewhat lifeless.
Yeah, there's almost a Body Snatchers quality about it. Yeah. Like, here's this really cloned thing, but doesn't quite look right, even though it probably is pretty close. There's a deadness to it that's really ugh.
yeah and that's exactly where I was going with it, is that I don't feel that deadness from Elliot in this movie. Yeah. And I love the finer details, like the broken tooth, and he has a scar. So you don't tell you how it happened, right? Yeah. But you can tell he's been around.
Yeah he's been through some stuff.
Yes.
I think there's a healthy distrust of humanity with him more than the animated Elliot.
Oh, for sure.
You know, animated Elliot is just wandering into town with Pete, no problem.
Yeah.
And he's eager to explore. This one just wants to be in his forest, and for the most part, humanity's done nothing but hurt nature.
Yes.
So he's very distrustful of it. Pete's about the only one. It takes those interactions, at least, that Elliot witnesses for him to take to other human beings.
Yeah, there's what starts out as a beautiful scene, almost halfway through the movie, when Pete introduces Grace and
Meacham and Natalie.
And Natalie to Elliot. And Meacham's thrilled, right? Because he's like, I finally get to see it again, right?
Yeah, they're being very quiet and all kind of the whole scene.
Very respectful.
Respectful.
And a little bit scared.
Yeah, I mean, there's trepidation on everybody's part, because Elliot's kind of sniffing him out.
Yeah. But yeah, there's that wonderful moment where Natalie reaches out and touches him, and it's really is a fantastic moment of cinema.
Yeah.
And that particular moment in the movie, and it's immediately shattered. And it's, again, makes it incredibly powerful, because you go from this touching, incredible moment to something that's really quite horrific.
Yeah, Gavin and his gang, they've decided they're going to go hunting for this thing, because they were scared out of their minds when they saw it earlier in the film, or at least when Gavin saw it early in the film, and they saw the damage it can do when it was knocking down trees and things.
And you understand their motivation, because he comes because their first interaction with Elliot, he is scary and aggressive and terrifying.
Elliot's motive is to keep them from venturing further into the forest, knocking more of it down.
Well, they'd invaded his home.
They
actually had walked into his home.
That's true. Yeah, they found his cave.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, he's aggressive and territorial.
Because he's still an animal, right? So his response makes sense when you think of it that way.
Yeah.
But if you were a human being who was inclined to hunt animals anyhow, your response would be exactly what Gavin's was. But the thing that makes him slightly reprehensible and makes him the bad guy, I'm air quoting that, but I'm doing it verbally.
I mean, yeah, they were hunting for it when they break up that moment, but when Gavin realizes his family's there, his brother and the wife and the kids are there, it's like, oh, get those people out of here. Yeah. Get out of here, you know, before something bad happens.
But like, even though they're telling him to stop.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what makes him the bad guy, is even when he's being told, stop it, mm-hmm. he makes it worse.
Yeah.
Right? That's what makes him the bad guy. And then, of course, after he captures him, right?
Single-mindedness of that first interaction, that this is aggressive and he's, like, super worried that something's going to happen to his family.
Yeah, I mean, his motives were pure, but his actions, because they morph into now to greed. It's like, well, think of what I can do with this thing.
Yeah, right? So, I mean, he even tells his friends, like, go to tranquilizers, no live rounds, because just in case they hit anybody else, it's not going to be something lethal. And that kind of flips into greed when they actually finally catch him.
Yes, right. And that's where that intent becomes a lot less pure, right? Yeah. Is he becomes very focused on how it's going to benefit him.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's safe, and he's now got this mythical beast that nobody's ever seen before.
Oh yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I want the credit. Like, he's going to be famous.
Yeah.
There's no question he would be famous. Right.
Cuz he doesn't want to be a logger or a mill runner. He actually says that. He says, "My brother can have the mill. I never wanted it. I don't want it."
Yeah.
So this is his way out of a job that he doesn't really want to do in the first place.
But he seems to be quite good at it. The men respect him.
Well, cuz he's likable, even though his character is the again, air quoting, the bad guy, right? He's the
antagonist.
Villain. He's the antagonist. Yeah, he's not a villain, but he's definitely the antagonist.
He's the closest thing that this movie has to a villain.
Yes, he's quite likable, right? Like you said, he cares about his family. He cares about his men. It's just his priorities are different than everybody else's.
Yeah.
In that end scene where he realizes that his actions have put his family in danger, and they're his actions, and he knows it.
Yeah. Right?
The change in the character is immediate and remarkable.
Yeah, this isn't the original film where the entire town becomes aware of Elliot, and it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, they got to get him out of there. And yes, a lot of the town becomes aware of Elliot, but it is you can't come back. Like, there are going to be far worse than Gavin after you.
Yes.
And it won't be pretty. Like, he has to go.
Yes, he does. Yeah. And
he can't even go back to that cave.
No, and there's one because it was destroyed.
Yeah. But, you know, they do make a point of telling more folk tales and fairy tales within the film through Meacham of where to find dragons and head north into the mountains and follow the North Star.
And I love how Pete's told that story by Natalie.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that scene comes when they're at their destroyed home, and Elliot's saying, "We have to leave." You know that Pete has told Elliot where to find the other dragons, right? That's without showing you. I love how the fact it wasn't spoon fed. They tell you at the beginning. They expect you to remember.
In a way, this is a tale about two orphans.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. The only thing they have is each other.
Yeah.
And which reminds me of one of the best scenes in the whole movie is the scene where the bear comes out and Pete stands up and makes himself all big and roars at it, not realizing that Elliot's...
That's the one where he poked his head out before. Hmm?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, not even being threatening to the bear. It's just like, the bear spots this thing.
Well, you kind of get the impression that the wildlife is aware of Elliot.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, right? And they see him and they're like, okay.
And he is the alpha.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's also the thing is that there's a gentleness about Elliot all the way through it. He's not aggressive unless he's threatened or Pete's threatened. And his aggression is, for the first part of the movie, is just basically his presence.
Like in the original, he can turn invisible, but it works a little differently. There are rules to it.
Yeah.
I liked when he kind of crushes the bobcat.
Yes.
Yeah, like, it's spiteful.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where you just get to see some of those aspects of his personality, like, because he does have one. It's not as lighthearted, for the most part, as the Elliot from the original movie, but there's definitely still a personality there.
Yeah.
And the scenes where he's on the back of the truck are heart-wrenching to start with. He's just where he's strapped down and he's beaten and defeated, and it's...
Yeah, he's been so tranked, he can't fly. I mean, it's all there to build tension throughout the film. Yeah. It's a bit of a King Kong moment, right?
Yeah.
Where you're waiting for the big beast to break free.
Yes. and he doesn't really, right? He's rescued, yeah. which again,
yeah, unlike the original film where they only catch him temporarily.
Yes.
I mean, most of those guys are far too clumsy and
oafish. Yeah, they're
to make anything work too terribly long, even when Dr. Terminus has got his eyes set on, and at this point Elliot's free and he's got this harpoon thing and the ropes wrapped around, he's standing in the middle of it, so you know it's gonna happen next. He realizes he's fired this off and then it goes ajar because he's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And he's going flying.
Yes. And again, funny moments in there. They were
and then with the goofy noise.
Yes. Yes. Which I love. I did love that. Even though it was horribly out of place, I still loved it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, it's out of place as the Wilhelm scream.
Yeah.
You know it when you hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no question that you know that one.
And Disney uses that almost as often as the Wilhelm scream is used by everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There's lots to like about the original. Like, I don't want to say I didn't like it. I just felt that it's really dated.
Yeah, it is a piece of its time, and if you can handle that, that's great. It is still a pretty watchable movie, and it's not the best of its generation.
No.
They really wound up making something, I think, special with the remake that still flew under the radar, and possibly because people don't have a fondness for Pete the Dragon as much as other Disney films.
No, it is one of their lesser-known films for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, aside from Mary Poppins, their animation and live action films really never did seem to take off.
They don't quite carry the same nostalgia. I mean, no. They certainly do have them. I mean, we've covered some in the past, so they're there, but they often will get revisited to mixed success.
Yes.
But you get the feeling if Disney Plus had came out a few years ago, it would have just gone to Disney Plus.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It doesn't feel like Disney gave it the backing it deserved.
Yeah, because even when it was coming out, like, its advertising presence wasn't huge.
No, unless you're sort of one of those people like me who does read a lot of entertainment media, mm-hmm. it probably slid under your radar, right? Mm-hmm. Or unless you have kids and saw that targeted marketing. And I don't think this is really for kids so much. I think it's for that...
It's a
family film, yeah. Preteen film, between film, like right in that generation.
It's
like
not one of those, you know, dump your kids off of the theater films. It's you watch it as a unit.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's not quite enough of those. I mean, Jesus Christ, for how many times they're going for sentimentality and even flat-out tears in that remake. It's like, it makes you wonder who they were going for. But
well, yeah, I mean, it's the beauty of this film is it is enjoyable as an adult.
Yeah.
Because there's a great story.
And I think that's part of our problem with the original is it's clearly geared to children, despite having some fairly grotesque stuff
and some pretty adult themes at points, yeah.
Described within the films, but I don't think it's going to be taken as literally as an adult would.
Yeah.
For children.
No, it certainly wouldn't be. Because, like I said, I remember liking it more as a kid. Like, I do remember liking it. And then I saw Star Wars, and that's probably why my memory's...
Yeah, they're really only singing about doing bad things. Anything as bad as what they comes out of their mouths actually happens.
No, that's true. But some of the things that they say...
Oh, yeah, it's horrendous.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you going to do to Pete again? You're like, okay, you want to touch her. All right. And that could be the adult mind going in bad places, but those people were pretty scary.
They were, and I mean, as an adult, especially in this day and age, you can infer that is a very rapey comment. Mm-hmm. Right? Whether or not it was intended as one, it is now.
And I can certainly see out of TV airings, see that getting cut out.
Oh, for sure.
And possibly even the entire using every bit song of Terminus, because it is like, oh my god, you're talking about chopping him up and using him for hair tonics and all sorts of weird potions and things. This is good, this part's good for this part's good for that. Yeah. It's like, oh boy.
I mean, it's grotesque in its own way, but it's not
you need it to motivate the villainous nature of the character.
You do, and it's not horribly graphic. I mean, in this, there's not. I mean, it is, but it's not.
What I guess what he goes, what he says. I mean, he's clearly the villain when he shows up. Yeah. You know, he's going to get his comeuppance, and you know he's not going to make himself too likable along the way, even though he quite is.
Yeah,
he's got a lot of charm to him.
He does.
Charm and schmarm.
Which is perfect for the character, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Because he is a shyster.
Yeah,
because,
I mean, when he first arrives, they want to lynch him, because last time he showed up, nothing that he works, they sold him worked.
And in some cases, some bad side effects happened. Yeah. That old man with the pink hair.
Yes, which I thought was great. I'm like, when did they make this movie?
Yeah.
I mean, pink hair is pretty common now, but back in 1977.
Although I have to admit, Red Buttons with his, like, planted in the audience as, like, the old lady, and then the quick change into the cripple. Like, the old lady, he did that really well.
He did that really well. At first, I didn't realize it was.
I didn't until, like, he got off stage and started changing. And I'm like, whoa, oh, okay. I'm like, well, that lady's got to be a plant.
Yeah.
And, sure enough, I didn't realize it was Red Buttons at all.
I did realize, but it took me about a minute. I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah,
that's his assistant. Yeah, but one of the other things that bothered me about the original is the way that Lampy was responding to his experience with Elliot,
mm-hmm.
right? Because, I mean, yeah, admittedly, he was drunk when he first runs into Elliot, right? Mm-hmm. But Elliot never threatened him. And so he's got this unfounded fear of the dragon, and they just keep perpetuating that. And it made me uncomfortable, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, because it undermined the kindness that was happening when Elliot wasn't referenced, and he was never willing to give Elliot a chance, even though Pete clearly has an affection for him and that he's taking care of Pete. I like the way that they handled it with Meacham, because mm-hmm. there's none of that fear. That unfounded fear of the dragon.
Well, I mean, that comes from other characters, but
yeah.
not from that family. No,
that's right, and that's that was the one of the things that yeah. I found.
I mean,
didn't quite fit.
Yeah, for the most part, there was doubt in their minds as to okay, well, he's just made up this friend to get him through this situation for the most part, except for Meacham, who like, oh, there's something out there.
Yeah. Well, and I like the way that Grace sort of sees the drawing that Pete does.
And starts making connections.
And starts making connections and goes talks to her dad.
And she's seen her dad make these drawings.
Yeah, and there's that path to belief.
Yeah.
Right? And that's never present in the original, right? It's mm-hmm. like there's no path to belief until actually.
There you go, until you have the cartoon hole in the school wall.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going back to the original Elliot's destructiveness.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yep, that is an Elliot-shaped hole.
Yes. Yeah, which, again, part of the 70s trope is that cartoony figure through the wall. And it was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to say that I can't believe I noticed it while I was watching it, but how poorly constructed that school was. There's no frame.
A stiff breeze would have
knocked that thing over.
Yeah. I think it was just drywall.
There wasn't much wall there.
No, when they made the hole, it was kind of looked like paper.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why I noticed it, but I did. But that's the lead up to that bit, though, is really powerful, because she's abusing
Pete. Yeah, she's thinks he's lying again, and like the school bell's going off outside, so Pete volunteers to go deal with it. So she knows it's going off on its own, but then she sees him hanging from the thing. I'm trying to stop it. He's going up and down on the floor. He's like literally being lifted off the ground. And he gets beat for that.
Yeah. Well, she's a horribly unlikable woman all the way through the movie.
Oh, no.
Even at the end when she's rescued by...
She's got those poor children lined up like they're freaking Nazi Gestapo.
Yeah, she's awful. She is awful. I mean, another unlikable character in the movie. And that's the... There might be... That'd be part of the problem is there's so many unlikable characters in the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it's almost too many villains.
Yeah, and she's not a clear... She's a villain to the children, not so much to the dragon. She doesn't believe it until it surfaces, and then it kind of changes her attitude a little bit.
But, yeah, during that scene where Elliot rescues them. And I love the fact that they kept that aspect in the remake, but made it completely different, right?
I like the fact that Elliot's fascinated by other children.
Yeah.
Like, he follows those children early in the film when they're all lined up. It's like, oh,
yeah,
I'm part of that. And like, I'm guessing that thing on the school bus was a similar nod in the remake when he hops to the back of the bus and he's seeing the other kids in there for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of nods.
They're very subtle moments. Okay, that's, you know, you can go, okay, that's alluding to that moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's certainly less chaotic.
I like the fact that, yeah, there's so much, like I said, they keep the essence of Elliot really, really well. The kind protector.
Yeah.
Right. But capable of violence to protect if needed. In the original, I mean, Elliot's retaliation against these adults and children who are cruel to Pete are generally pretty benign. They're a womp or a knockdown or...
Yeah, he's right. Very aware of his size and strength and what he could actually do to these guys. I mean, this is a giant fire-breathing dragon.
Yes. But it's not until the sort of final scenes where you really get to see how powerful he really is.
Yeah.
And that's present in both films.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're both very restrained, and it's usually like... Okay, he's not out to harm, but to send a little bit of a message. It's like, yeah, I'm not cool with that, and yeah, you're going to get plumped on your butt for that little comment or whatever.
And you don't see a lot of that.
The more violent the person is to Pete, the more hostile Elliot gets.
Yes. And it's all on that same kind of scale.
Present in both movies.
Yeah. There's not a lot of hostility towards Pete in the remake, right? Mm-hmm. This is more the environmental, is like the things that happen, one thing leads to another, but really, for the most part, everybody's kind to Pete.
It's something they did in the original film, which I really liked, is they've tried to catch Elliot, and the chaos has happened, and Elliot's kind of taking care of the bad guys now, they're strung up. And the town is now sees him full on. Here he is. Here's the big green dragon. And this power pole for the lights is falling in the town, and it's going to hit the mayor. And this poor mayor has just had bad luck every time he exits the office.
Yes, and it's either Terminus's fault or Elliot's fault, but one way or the other, he has bad luck.
Yeah, but this one could be lethal, so... Elliot just jumps right in there, saves the mayor, and that really tells this entire superstitious town of what this dragon's really about.
Yes.
They instantly kind of fall in love with him.
Yeah, which is hokey.
It's hokey. It's Disney.
Actually, I think that was what I said when I first started watching it to you, too, is this movie's really hokey.
It is, yeah.
But... like I said, once I got past the first half, I did start enjoying it more.
Yeah. And, you know, the remake has its own versions of that. Like I said, not hokey stuff, but it is...
It's schmaltzy, though.
Those moments of schmaltzy rescue, you know, the dragon is doing something kind and benevolent and helping others.
Yes. Yeah, there's some schmaltz, but not a lot of hokey. And as a credit to the director and the cast for
oh yeah, there's so much schmaltz. I mean, it's Spielberg levels of sentimentality.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And I would.
And I don't think that's a bad thing.
I would say if you're going to watch either of them, watch the remake.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you have really little kids that might like the original, but even then, the song and dance stuff. You don't see that in kids' shows anymore, so I'm not sure how much they're going to dig that anymore.
Well, we're seeing it more with the Disney to live-action stuff. I mean, Aladdin has a lot of music in it. Beauty and the Beast did, so it's there.
Okay. So you might maybe give it a shot, but if they're, you know, in the little olders where they're in 10, 11, 12, maybe go for the remake instead.
I would agree with that.
All right. Well, I think that's it for Pete's Dragon from 1977 and 2016. It's always fun to kind of visit a family film with some of the darker stuff we cover, especially what we're going to be leading to with All the Horror Month, which is only a couple weeks away now. We'll be talking about horror movies throughout the month of October. And, of course, All the Horror is not just about Invasion of the Remake. It is a podcast movement, and lots of podcasts are getting in on the act in this, what I like to call a horror convention for your ears.
That is a good way of putting it. That's a very good way of putting it.
Yes. If you follow the Twitter account, All the Horror 18, and the hashtag All the Horror. You can find out which podcasts are participating. There'll be new podcasts dropping every day.
Yes.
I'm not sure how many individual podcasts, but ideally there's going to be a different one every day.
Some days there's two.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, if all goes well, we are back to 31 podcasts. So that means one new hosting podcast, like one more sort of featured podcast every day.
Yeah.
Plus bonus episodes from other participating podcasts.
Yeah. So our show, we're going to be doing all horror themes all month long. And of course, we'll be participating in the All Horror event. And there are 31 or more different participating podcasts and artists and writers
and authors
and authors within All the Horror month. And again, you can follow all of that action by following at All the Horror 18 on Twitter and using the hashtag All the Horror.
Yes, do it.
Do it.
Yeah, the villain versus villain poll is still going as of this recording because it will continue right up until the end of October.
I have been in on it the whole go, so it's been fun voting on those.
It has been. It's been a lot of fun, and I, so much thanks to Drew for putting that together and getting that out there for everybody to
Drew from the Real Feels podcast.
Yes, thank you to him because he did take a lot off my plate by doing that, so.
That's great. Yeah. You guys are doing this monumentous thing, and it's pretty much just the two of you guys. So this is a crazy event to coordinate for two people.
It has been, yes. But it's been fun. Like I said, I've made a lot of new friends because there are a lot of new podcasts this year. Of course, adding our authors and writers, our bloggers, they're all just so interesting and so much fun. I can't wait for you to read some of the stuff that some of our authors have provided so far. So yeah, well,
that's cool. That's a new aspect that wasn't there last year. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that's going to be as well.
Yeah, I am nuts. I'm going to say that right now. I am nuts for doing this again, but I'm probably going to do it again next year. So I don't know how I'm going to make it bigger and better, but I will.
Anybody who wants to give them help, send them a message.
Yeah.
All right. And of course, you love Invasion of the Remake and you want to spread the word, don't you? You want to tell your friends, your families, and your pets to listen to Invasion of the Remake? Of course you do, because we do more than just horror movies and action movies. We do family movies like Pete's Dragon. And we got a little something for everybody on the show.
Yeah, and we hardly swore in this episode, so it's pretty safe for kids.
I think I dropped an F-bomb. One. Or PG-13.
Yeah.
I think we're a lot more like family friendly than we used to be.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of swearing in the first episodes, but now we only do it when we're really
agitated
by something. Yes.
You can follow us at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com if you would like to email us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments. We're always up for a fan challenge. We've got a couple of things we're looking at that have been recommended to us that we will try to get on the schedule post All the Horror, so we'll start looking at some of that stuff. But if it's a horror movie, it'll probably get pushed back even further because we'll want to give that a wide berth after October. So even after November, because we're still kind of into it in November a little bit.
We are, yeah. We usually don't get back into it about February because we have Women in Horror Month in February.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll do it the whole month again yeah, like we did last year, but we'll definitely give it at least two episodes to acknowledge that movement for sure.
Absolutely.
And of course, tell your friends where to find us. We're in a ton of different places. You can use our Linktree link on our social media to find some of those places, but here's just a few: Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, Radio Public, radio.com, the app, and even freaking YouTube. So if you can't find us, it's because you're not looking.
Damn you.
So yeah, I recommend us to your friends and help spread that invasion to get more earballs on the show. Trish is like, my earballs are ringing.
Yes.
They said it without me.
Yes, we did.
And I'll send her some good vibes so she doesn't get eaten by a shark.
Please, yes. Scare her a little bit. We'd be fine with that, but don't eat her.
Yeah. Have them, like, brush up against her. It's fine.
Yeah, we want stories.
Yeah, we want stories. We just don't want loss of a limb stories.
Yes, exactly. I'm such a dick.
All right. Well, I got another good one for you next week. We're going to be doing a remake of something. But I never tell you what it's going to be. And I think Sam's a little excited for it because it's something he's never heard of.
So. Yes. Yeah. I'm actually really excited about this one because it sounds really interesting. And as Jay's told me more, I'm like, yeah, I want to see this.
Yeah, there's some good themes. I've never seen it. I've only seen a couple of clips, and these are the ones I really get excited about because it's just like, oh, wow, like that sounds really cool, and I've never seen this before. And I
just hope it's not on The Peeping Tom, where we've neither seen it, and it's so good that we can't do anything with it.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's not one of those, the gem is so hidden but so good, it's
yes.
too shiny. But yeah. We'll find out. It'll still be fun to talk about.
Yes, it will be, yeah. It may end up being a review episode instead of a remake episode.
Well, that's kind of how Peeping Tom wound out.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like, all right, and how do we make this better? We can't.
Yep. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that it's good enough to enjoy, but there's enough there for us to make it a little bit.
I think there's some interesting and certainly topical subjects within that particular one. So it might be good that Trish is still swimming with sharks because the soapbox. We'll try to keep the soapbox to a minimum.
Yes. We do it too, but.
Yes, we do. But I think it's a subject that's certainly worth talking about. And you'll have to wait till next week to find out what it is. Until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And she's swimming with sharks. We are out of here.
Yeah.